It's a kill, they're leaving it very open. Windbar, well, oh, what a kick! It's a goal!
Look at him go, Mr. Magic. And kick the most unbelievable goal you have ever seen in a month of Sunday.
Hello, 90s footy fans. Welcome to episode 62 of the 90s Club Footy Podcast. This week we chat with former Melbourne Demon, Rod Grinter. Rod, a Katandra product, played with the Melbourne Demons between 1985 and 1995, playing a total of 134 games and kicking 57 goals. He is currently the president of the Melbourne Demons Past Players Group. In this episode, we talk about Rod's opportunity to play in a prelim final and grand final during the early part of his career, playing defence then moving forward, playing under the great John Swooper Norvey, his hard man tag, and how he found out about his delisting at the end of the 1994 season. I hope you enjoy the 62nd member of the 90s Club Footy Podcast, Rod Grinter. Rod Grinter, thank you for joining me on the 90s Club Footy Podcast. Great to have you on and looking forward to having some footy chat with you, mate.
Good on you, Trent. Great to be on board and, good on you for pulling this together.
Oh, thanks, mate. I love just reminiscing with, players that played in my favourite era of the 1990s. So it's great to have you on board and talk about your career. Now, before we sort of do, mate, talk all things about Rod Grinter and the Melbourne Demons. What are you doing with yourself now, mate, work-wise? And then do you still have much footy involvement?
Yeah, from a work point of view, I work for a stock feed company called Ridley. So Ridley is an Australian-based manufacturing company that produces feed for all types of animals. I deal in the 20-kilo bag area of the business, so selling chook food, dog food, horse feed, dairy feeds. So I've been with them for 9 years. I've always been in the sales game. So during my footy career, footy was the number one. So I never had a trade or an ambition to be, the bloody Prime Minister of Australia. So I basically just gave all my attention and focus to footy. And during that time, had a number of jobs. And then obviously, as you get older, you realise pretty quickly that you need to earn an income outside of your footy. Not that I was getting paid like these guys are getting paid now, but so sales was my go. So I was in beverage sales for about 20, 25 years. So worked for Coca-Cola, CUB, lots of different beverage companies. And the ripe old mid-50s working for a stock feed company. Footy involvement, I don't have any coaching involvement now. I finished that up at the end of 2019, which was well-timed just before COVID. I coached assistant coached at a private school in Melbourne called St. Kevin's. I was there for 20 years coaching. And my current involvement in footy now is I'm the president of the Melbourne's Past Players. So me and all the other guys on the committee pull together functions to try and keep everybody together and hold functions and support players, past players, when they need it.
And 2021, mate, I dare say that group would have been up and about when the D's broke that premiership drought and you guys got to celebrate. Unfortunately, not in Victoria, but the grand final win was in Perth. But nevertheless, I'd say your group would have been high as a kite when it came to that premiership win.
Look, we have an annual reunion each year, and at the start of the COVID, obviously we couldn't get together, so we decided to hold a Zoom reunion, and we had over 100 past players and officials on our Zoom. And I was a bit sceptical of the idea at the start, but it was a massive success. A lot of, we got the current day boys to come onto the Zoom and have a bit of a chat with everybody. And then obviously that carried on into 2021. So our reunions are held on the Thursday before the grand final every year at the MCG. So in 2021, obviously Melbourne were over in Perth, and we held our Zoom reunion, and we got Gorney on, we got Goody on, we had Jack Viney, we had Alan Richardson all come through on the Zoom just to have a chat to everybody, and it was fantastic. And then obviously to follow up, a couple of days later and do what they did was fantastic. And we did happen to sneak away to a little pub on a Sunday, a pleasant Sunday morning here in Melbourne, where there was about 70 or 80 past players turned up and put the game on replay and had a few beers.
Oh, lovely. Fantastic, mate. Let's look at your footy journey, Balls. Obviously, your journey started in the mid-80s. You're from the Goulburn Valley around that Shepparton area. How did you get your way? How did you find your way to the Melbourne Footy Club?
Yeah, I'm from a place called Katandra West. So I played midgets and senior footy there, so under 14s, and then straight into the seniors as a 15-year-old playing in the Tungama League. And I had 2 years playing senior footy there, and I was part of the Norm Smith development squad in Shepparton, which the Melbourne Footy Club was zoned to that area, and they invited young prospects to come in and train. I think it might have been once a week or once a fortnight or something. So Gary Lyon and Stephen Tingay, these types, all from that area, were a part of that. And in that, we had the footy club had organised a game, and I made the Norm Smith squad that came down to Melbourne from the country. So you had a country team play a city team, and we played out at Waverley, which was just like a normal game of footy. And Ray Jordan was the coach of the under-19s at the time at Melbourne, and Barass was the senior coach, Ron Barassi. And after that game, Ray Jordan asked me if I would be interested in coming down and playing in Melbourne's under-19s the following year. So that was 1982. And I went, wow, ooh, that's a big move, because as a young kid growing up, my ambitions were never to play VFL footy as it was back then. It was just to play senior footy at my local club. And being a country boy and only 17, moving out of a country town into the big smoke was something that was a bit daunting. However, I obviously came on board with about four or five other boys from that area that came down, and we became mates and played in the under-19s in 1983. And this year is actually a 40-year reunion. I'm organising a 40-year reunion from that under-19s team because we won the flag in that year.
Was there many players that sort of followed your journey from that under-19 side that sort of went on and played reserves and then seniors, and you played a fair bit of seniors footies with as well? Like, was there many players that sort of followed the same journey as you?
Yeah, well, in that under-19s team, which I've just got here on the wall, let me just get it off. I'll tell you who they were. Like, Greg Healy was our captain. He was in that team. There was... who else do we know here? Brett Bailey, John Fidge. Who else has gone on? Stephen Newport.
Yep.
So there's sort of Graham Yates. So there was quite a few in that team that went on and played over 100 games for Melbourne. So it was a reasonably successful squad, and that group of boys went through, obviously, and developed, played seconds footy and then senior footy, and we sort of all blossomed together, if you like, after a couple of years, yeah.
Runs his good 6 or 7 metres. Oh, he's still going. And eventually goes short and finding his teammate in Rodney Grinter at half forward. Lightly built Grinter.
Ryan Wilson calling for it to come down to the forward pocket.
But Grinter, intent upon having a shot. He kicked a point early on in the game. Drop punt this time. Looks much better indeed. It is a good goal to Grinter, his first in league football, and Melbourne's 8. 8-10, they trail Hawthorn 12-12 on Sevens, big league.
1985 was your first season, I guess, as a VFL player. You played your debut game. I think you played 10 or 11 games that year. I was looking at your statistics the other night, and for your third game, you netted 5 goals and had 14 touches against Carlton. Not a bad start for a bloke playing his first sort of season of senior footy in the VFL.
Yeah, look, it was one out of the box, obviously, to be able to kick 5 goals in your third game of league footy was pretty special. And my first year, I was sort of in and out. I was at 11 games. It was my first 2 years were 11 games. So, you know, if I wasn't, and I was playing in the forward flank or forward pocket. So if you weren't kicking goals or you weren't getting a touch, which was always pretty difficult, you know, I got dropped and went back and played in the seconds and then did well in the seconds and get promoted again. And that happened in the first 2 years. So 85 and 86, in, out, in, out, in, out, and wasn't really an established part of the team. And then at the end of 85, Barassad left and John Northiard came to the club, and Greg Wells was my reserves coach. And so when obviously I was playing in the reserves, he was my coach, and he threw me onto a halfback flank in the reserves, and I sort of found my niche there, and then went up and played in the seniors on a halfback flank. And you know, this was in 1987, and I'm not sure how many games I played in 87, but it might have been 16 or 17 games in 87, which was a year that Melbourne broke the drought in terms of making the finals for the first time since 64.
Well, funny you sort of mentioned about finals, because 87, I guess it's remembered for probably the wrong reasons for you guys. I want to ask you, you've made the finals that year after, you know, sort of not playing finals for quite a long time. We know the story and the narrative of the prelim final. Obviously, you know, Jim Stein's running through the mark and the penalty was given to Buchanan and he kicked the goal. How hard did that result hit the team and even yourself personally? Like, obviously being so close to being in that last day in September, and would have been a genuine chance to potentially take it out as well, had you just made it. How hard did it hit the team and yourself?
Oh, look, it was massive because we were on a roll. There was no doubt about it. We went through that finals campaign, smashing North, smashing Sydney, and then by over 100 points, both of those. Then to go into the prelim against Hawthorn, who had a magnificent team, and be in front 3 out of the 4 quarters. It was gut-wrenching. There were plenty of opportunities for us to nail the game in the last quarter, during that last quarter, but it came down to the last, you know, bloody 10 seconds or 5 seconds. I actually gave away the free kick, which a lot of people don't realise, and Jimmy saved my bacon by running across the mark, because if Bucky had kicked it from where he was on the 50, it would have been all my fault. But Jimmy ran across the mark and gave him that 15-metre penalty. And so in the rooms, and, like, to be honest, it's a memory that I can visualise only from watching it. I don't remember much of the game. There's a couple of things that happened during the game that I remember, but in terms of after the game in the rooms, I can't really recall what went down. I think we're all just so devastated. And then obviously you move on. You can't do anything about it, so you move on pretty quickly, and then we get into party mode, as you did back then. And we then put our heads down and our bums up and worked our backsides off over the pre-season to give ourselves another chance.
How was Jim Steins after that moment? Like, you know, like a new guy that's sort of only new to league footy and so forth. And I've got no doubt you guys would have got around him and really supported him. But, you know, how was he after that moment? Because I guess it's a famous moment, and it was a big moment for the Demons, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And it's, you know, it copped its obviously fair amount of publicity, and obviously Jim being at the forefront of all of that. But I think just the man that Jim was, going back to that stage in his life, there was no surprise he turned out to be what he was. His strength of character and, you know, just to move on and take it on the chin and get on with things, because there was plenty of things that happened prior to Jim getting to that stage of his footy career where he'd been kicked up the bum heaps of times by, you know, being on a list and getting sent to Paran and playing at Paran, and then getting back up into Melbourne's list, and then all of a sudden becoming an absolute icon of the league, let alone Melbourne. So the way he handled that was like he handled everything, mate. He just took it on and didn't hide away from it, and went on and obviously became an absolute superstar.
Yeah, inspirational human. I continually read his book, and I always refer back to his documentary too that was on quite a few years ago, and you just can't not feel the admiration and just, you know, you can get a real good feeling of the type of bloke he was. And I think if we each had a Jim Steins in our life, we'd be very lucky people.
Yeah, no, definitely. He was one of a kind, and if you relate him outside of just the human being himself to a footy point of view, well, you know, 244 consecutive games of Brownlow medal, never grew up playing the game. It's an amazing story, and best and fairest, and it's amazing.
The following year, you said that gave you a good kick up the backside, and obviously his guys worked a lot harder, and you went that next step. You made the grand final in 88, but you came up against a very, very strong Hawthorn side, and despite not winning it, how did you enjoy the moment of being there on the last Saturday of the season?
Yeah, it's a fair way down the track, but it did go very quickly. And John Lawley used to always say to us, you know, boys, you've got to take every opportunity you can, because before you know it, your careers will be over. And at the time you go, oh, yeah, sure, mate. You know, you always say there'll be next year. And all of a sudden 10 years have gone by and, you know, we've had our chances and we just missed it. But for us it was probably unfortunate that we came up against a superhuman team in Hawthorn who, like, you know, Dermot Burton, every time he gets introduced, 5 day, 5 night, you know. So those guys played in multiple grand finals, won multiple premierships, and we had a really good team, but we didn't have as many stars as what Hawthorn did. And Hawthorn had the good team as well as a lot of really superstars. So, you know, we got absolutely annihilated in that grand final. But on reflection, and even watching the game, which I've watched it maybe once or twice, the result, you're watching the game, it didn't look as bad as the result. It was the result was terrible. But, you know, even watching it, we're always in it. You felt you were always in it, you know, but they were just too good. And, you know, you talked about 87, if we had beaten Hawthorn in that famous preliminary final, you know, people say that we would have beaten Carlton. But I sort of say that Carlton was sitting up there watching both Hawthorn and Melbourne beat the living suitcases out of each other. Mm. And they had a week off, and then we would have went into that team without Robbie Flower, without Brian Wilson, as Hawthorn went in with injuries everywhere. And the result was obviously, I think, would have been the same. Even though you wouldn't have given that away, you would have gone into a grand final and taken the loss rather than not. It was just unfortunate timing for us in our careers that we came up against such a bloody good team in Hawthorn.
Hawthorn get out of it temporarily. Mew comes out. Through came Guindo and got rid of Mew. A hip and shoulders put Mew out. Pritchard puts the ball forward and Mew's in trouble there. But it was a fair hip and shoulder by Rodney Guindo. Good, strong, aggressive football.
The next few years, Rod, the Demons were still a great side, and you played in 5 or 6 consecutive finals campaigns from 87, mm-hmm. I think it was, to 91. Do you have a final that stands out more than any? Like, and one that I was looking through the stats and saw some footage the other night when I was sort of researching was that win against Essendon in 1991, where I think you guys come from behind to win. You know, that was a ripper, you know, as a supporter, and watching the highlights was great to watch. But is there one final that sort of stands out more than any that you guys were successful in during that finals little reign of appearances that you guys had?
Yeah, look, it's hard to – I'm not a great one from remembering things or now I've been knocked out a few times, but I don't know whether that's got anything to do with it. But in terms of you go back through the stats, and I think somebody might have sent me something. There's a guy that's on Instagram that sends a lot of photos and a lot of stats. He's called MFC 1858 on Instagram is his handle. And there's some things on there that he put on. And there was a game, a final, I think it was against West Coast, I'm not sure what year, but I kicked four goals in a final. And I'm blown if I can remember that.
I think it was 1990, funnily enough. I think it was 1990 because I was looking at the numbers the other night.
You know, I can't recall that. I can't recall that. And I mustn't have sat down and watched it. I probably would have, going back bloody years and years ago. I've got no recall of a lot of my footy. And like I said, I don't know whether that's just a thing that my brain can't retain it or, you know, there's guys that you talk to and they can remember when they had a kick in the forward pocket and that, to so-and-so who kicked the goal, you know, and I'm going, how do they bloody hell remember that?
I want to know about John Northey. He was predominantly your coach during the time at the D's. I think you might have had Barmy for a season, you had Barassi for a season or two, but Swooper was the man that was sort of held the reins during your time. Tell us a bit about John Northey, the coach.
He was, he came in not as a high profile like Barass. He coached, I think, the Swans, obviously a premiership player from Richmond, but was a really just a massive motivator. And for us as young boys coming through, he was very strong in supporting us in everything that we did. And, it was pretty tough times. Like our training and all that sort of stuff was pretty solid, very solid. But his way of coaching was, it was always the motivation type it was us against them. So we were, the AFL didn't want us in the competition. Didn't matter who we were playing, everybody was in favour of them over us. And that was his rah-rah, get everybody up and about. And we'd go out and, we did quite well during his reign. And then it obviously fell away near the end. But in 92, I think it was, we really struggled. But I think it was, I played in, I think, 11 or 12 finals. From 87 through to 90, played 90. Did we play finals 93? 94, I think I played a couple under Barmy. Yeah. Under Barmy, yeah. But look, he was great. A man that was held with huge respect from all of us. And to this day, he's a person that I reach out to and contact. He found out my father passed away back in November, and obviously, those situations you don't go and advertise, but he found out about it and rang me straight away and he said, if I only had known, I would have been there, and sorry to hear it. But so that's the type of guy he was, and this is 30-odd years down the track.
Well, the next case up tonight, Jeff Hogg from Richmond has pleaded not guilty to a charge of striking Rod Grinder. That case is going on at the moment. And then the big one, Rod Grinder up for the second time this week. Already he's been rubbed out for 7 matches. Melbourne officials tell me he'll plead not guilty to a charge of striking Andy Goodwin of Richmond, and that in fact he'll say in evidence that his hand was open at the point of impact. So let's have a look at these two incidents right now.
It's well documented of your tribunal record, and I guess this is probably something you get spoken about and asked about all the time. You played the game strong and hard. How do you reflect on, I guess, the circumstances that occurred over your journey and obviously how hard you went? Do you look back now and think there was probably times I did go a little bit too much?
I think right from being a junior, I was always pretty straight-lined as a footballer. And if the ball was there to be won, I did whatever I could to win it. And if there was a teammate that needed protection or someone to stand up and help them out, well, I didn't shy away from that sort of stuff. I never felt once, and nobody would, some do, but nobody, they shouldn't. You should never feel worried that you're going to die on a footy field. And then sometimes, unfortunately, that may happen in very strange circumstances. But I never had the attitude of being worried about or having somebody intimidate me. And I was always the intimidator. And I felt that I needed to do that to keep getting the game each week, because each team during that period had sort of a bit of an enforcer in their side. And Yeah, I remember some games. Leon Cameron, I tell this story often. Leon Cameron was playing for Western Bulldogs or Footscray, and he was only a young bloke. I'm playing on a half-back flank, and he's carving up, might have been Stinger on the wing or something. So the runner comes out, and he said, you're on Leon Cameron. He's doing a lot of damage. Wear him tight, something like that. So I go over and line up next to him and just bump into him as I always did, and I'd say a few things. Well, he ran away from the footy, absolutely petrified. Now, I didn't touch him. I would have probably threatened him. You go near the footy and I'm going to kick your head off, those sort of things. But that intimidation factor absolutely helped me in my footy career play the way that I played and allow me to stay in the – in the competition from the under-19s through to when I finished in the reserves in 95, for 13 years. So it wasn't something that I sort of made up. It was just the way that I played, and I loved it.
And it was great. I must admit, I've been watching some of the footage over the last few nights, and I love the way you go hard at the footy, and I think it, and that was why 80s and 90s football was so good, because the contest was so hard and strong. Like, I get that, the health issues and so forth that happens now, we've got to be really mindful of it, but, as a pure football supporter back in those times, that hard contested footy, so good to watch.
Yeah. Oh, look, when they bring up highlights, if you're watching KO or Foxtel and they have an old game on, it is so much better than what we watch in the home and away. Like, the home and away today is a bit, it's structured, it's overcoached. But when you get into the finals, that's when the really good footy happens, and nothing better than a grand final. But yeah, if you're watching an old mid 80s, 90s game of footy, it's kicked long. There's big marks, there's big hits, there's big tackles. There's lots of goals kicked. Yeah, it was an exciting time of being involved, for sure.
1994 was your last year in the senior side, and watching the front bar some time ago, I did hear the story of the unfortunate way that you sort of were told that you were slash retired, which just flabbergasted me. Like, I just thought, like, I guess footy clubs have always been, you'd hope that always have stronger communication and letting, people know how they're sort of situated. But in this case, it wasn't quite the way it went for you.
No, look, it was I knew that I was getting close to the end. Like, I'd been there 10 years. I was an emergency for the preliminary final over in Perth that we got knocked out in that prelim. So I knew that my time was getting closer to finishing, but I still thought that I had maybe another year, as you all do, always think you've got another year left. So anyway, I was working at the footy club at the time. I was working in marketing at the footy club. So I was around the coaches. I was around the marketing team. I was there. But there was this, it was when I was in a pub somewhere. I don't know what I was doing, but the news came on, and this is how they did it back then. It's not like a big song and dance like it is now. It's basically, here's the ins and outs for Essendon, and here's the ins and outs for North, here's the ins and outs for Melbourne, and the ins are, so-and-so, and the outs are Rodney Grinter retired. I've gone, what? So I got straight on the phone and rang up Richard Griffiths, who was our footy manager at the time, and said, Griffiths, I've just seen on the news that I'm retired. What's going on? And he goes, hasn't Neil Barnes spoken to you? So they've obviously had meetings, and they had to obviously work out their lists and all that sort of stuff, because there was, I don't know how many on the list, might have been 52 on the list, or there were so many that you had on your senior list, but there was a supplementary list as well. So anyway, I said, no, he hasn't. He goes, we want to keep you around the club, but we need to make space for some young kids on our senior list. And I went, oh, okay. So then we had a meeting, and I ended up captaining the reserves in 95, and I reckon, and I won the best and fairest. I reckon I would have picked up another 14 games if I had been able to play, but I couldn't play because I wasn't on the list.
yeah,
which was unfortunate. But anyway, that was the way that I finished up. And then at the end of 95, the footy club asked me to continue on in 96 and do the same thing. But I was getting a base salary of $10,000 to play in this was to play in the seconds, and $250 a game. And I was working at the footy club. And Hassan Mann was the CEO at the time, and he said, "Rod, the footy club want to continue on with what we did in 95, but unfortunately we can't pay the $10,000 base. It'll just be match payments of $250. And I went, "What? You want me to go through another solid pre-season with everybody and develop the young kids and be around, blah, blah, blah?" And I was fielding phone calls from country clubs and interstate clubs to get involved in coaching and playing. And I said to Hass, "Mate, I think it's time that I make the break of this footy club," which was my second family, and went down to Tassie and coached down there for 3 years.
This is one of the boilovers of the season. Stretch, kick the last goal. McEwen in front, he'll need to take this mark. Off hands to Lyon, the hand pass to Grinter, and he gets another one.
Mate, I've loved our chat. I've loved your honesty and going through some of the big moments of your footy career. At the end of the podcast, I give my guests a couple of quick handballs. So I'm going to give you four names, four ex-teammates. I just want you to share one word to describe each of these teammates. So the first teammate I'm going to mention is Gary Lyon.
Legend.
A player that passed away, but was a great Irish import, I guess, for the Melbourne Demons, was Sean White.
Athletic.
Senior coach of the Western Bulldogs who played at the Demons during your time was Luke Beveridge.
Gun.
And the last one, this fella had a great career in the AFL, albeit a little short because he went over and played in the NFL on the speaker, Darren Bennett.
Scissor legs.
Who's the hardest opponent you've come up against?
Gary Ablett Sr.
Do you guys had a, was it back in the mid-80s, I reckon you guys had a reasonable tussle? That he had been suspended for, or he got reported for?
No, nothing like that. But we always, we certainly knew where each other were. He was always looking for me, and I was always looking for him. So, hold him with great respect in terms of the way that he played the game. And we was fortunate enough to obviously play against him, but I don't think I ever had the wood on him.
Best character at the club, and I mean, you know, who's the bloke that you love having a beer with and a bit of banter, and you know, maybe got into the sneaky little bit of trouble during your time at the D's?
Look, Gary was always good fun to be around. Gary Lyon, he was a great leader. Him and I were great mates during our footy career, and even post our footy career, but we sort of drifted apart just through lifestyles and where he's going, where I'm going. But he was a wave. As a footballer and as a leader, you couldn't get a better one. And then away from footy, you couldn't get a better bloke to sit at a bar and have a beer with.
And the last question I've got is that you did a bit of match day running for Neil Danaher, I think it was early 2000s, I read. In a sense, what was that experience like? And the reason I ask, I had Danny Delray on in a previous episode. He did some match day running for Rodney Ead and was telling the story of where he got absolutely berated because he forgot a message that Rocket had given him. So I'm just interested in the sentence, what it was like to be, you know, running, match day runner for the Reverend in Neil Danaher.
Yeah, look, it was a great way to get back involved at the club and obviously back into the AFL because I'd just finished playing. So I played until I was 35. So as I mentioned earlier, I went down to Tassie for 3 years and then played a year at Katandra, where I grew up, and then played a year at East Burwood in the Eastern Footy League and won two flags in the end. And then I knew my time was up as a player and got a phone call from Gary Lyon, actually, via Neil to ask whether I'd be interested in running or not, and met with Neil. And I obviously played against Neil and didn't really know him. And I do remember the words that he said, "It's the way to get back involved in the AFL balls." And I go, "Yeah, no worries. Yeah, good, good." So obviously I agreed to do that and did that for 7 years under Neil. And he was an amazing coach, very smart. We all know, obviously, of his recent battles that he's dealing with. And I'm heavily involved with lots of people to, you know, raising money for that charity. But an inspirational person. And prior, like during, if we get back to my running, he was a lunatic as a coach, even though he's a very intelligent man from a footy point of view and obviously away from footy, but an absolute psychopath when it comes to match day, like they all are, I think. And he, we had to go through several different ways of trying to get the message from him to us, because he would have the phone and he'd be watching the game, obviously, and he'd be riding every bump and every, and he was trying to give a message, and he'd be screaming halfway through a message, and we'd be sitting there because there was two runners at the time, couldn't understand what he was saying because he was going so bananas. So anyway, then we ended up getting Chris Fagan to transfer the message. So Neil would be in the background yelling and screaming what the changes were. Then calmly, Chris Fagan would pass the message down to us, and then we'd go out and deliver the message. But I'll give you one that I stuffed up. It was at Geelong, and I had to go and move Nathan Brown from the forward flank to go and play on Cameron Ling in the back pocket or Geelong's forward pocket. So I go, yep, got it, Brown. So I run out there and I run to Doggy Brown. Doggy, 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 you're on the wing, mate. You're on the wing. Doggy goes, right. So I'm running back. Cameron Ling sitting in the forward 50 all on his own, and Nathan Brown's on the wing. And the message that came down the phone, what the F and so-and-so did message did you give Brandy? I said, well, you wanted him on the wing. No, we want him on Cameron Ling. So fortunately, the ball didn't go down to the forward line, because otherwise, if it had gone down there and Ling got an easy goal, I would have been hung, drawn and quartered.
On that note, Rod Greeter, thanks for jumping on the 90s Club Footy Podcast, mate. Greatly appreciated. Love listening to your footy journey, and thanks for sharing your stories.
Good on you, Trent. All the best with it all, and thanks very much for having me on.
Really enjoying the movement up on the forward line. Peter Rode goes wide. Greeter behind this time. Oh, he got to the front. That's a top mark. He had no hope from behind Morwood.
One-hander in the end.
What we're talking about, he has got skill. Look at this. One at the front posse, eye on the footy, both of them. Morwood hanging on.
Oh. How did that stick? Oh, great effort, wasn't it?
Well, Rod Greeter has kicked one already. And he's kicked two. And Melbourne are 4-0.
That's the end of episode number 62. If you've missed any previous episodes, you can catch them all on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio and Amazon Music. We're on all the social media platforms, so drop us a line on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter on any particular episode you've enjoyed or a guest you would love to hear. If you would like to support the podcast, you can do so via the website Buy Me A Coffee. Just search the 90s Club Footy Podcast to show your support. Next week, our guest is multiple Hawthorn Premiership star, Darren Pritchard.
It's tough, it's rugged, it's good, solid AFL football.